Now, what the Buddha gained or what the Buddha attained on that first Wesak night, obviously only a Buddha can say. Or one might even say, not even a Buddha can say. There is a scripture, I forget which one, there is a scripture which says that from the night of his enlightenment to the night of his final passing away, the Buddha uttered not even one word. That means, of course, that the secret of his enlightenment, the nature of that great transforming experience which he underwent, is really incommunicable. So that's all that we can really say about it, that the Buddha's enlightenment was an incommunicable spiritual experience occurring at the highest spiritual, or we might even say highest transcendental level. And it cannot be described directly. We cannot say it's this, we cannot say it's that, we can't even say it isn't this or isn't that, because even that would be too limited. We can't say it is this and that, and we can't, according to the Buddha himself, even say it neither is this nor that. In other words, all ways of speaking, all ways of telling, as the Sutta Nipata says, are transcendent. We can only get some hint, we can only get some glimpse of it, as it were, indirectly, in terms of the difference which that experience made to the Buddha's outlook on existence as a whole. And we are told in the scriptures that after his enlightenment, when he surveyed the universe, when he surveyed the whole sphere, the whole vast range of conditioned existence, the Buddha saw, as it were, in the light of his supreme spiritual or transcendental experience, one thing, one law, one principle, or one truth, or one reality. He saw that the whole vast range and sweep of conditioned existence, from the lowest to the highest, in all its depth and all its breadth, was subjected to what he subsequently called the great law of conditionality. He saw that whatever arises anywhere in the universe, at any level, from the grossest material to the subtlest spiritual, arose in dependence on conditions, and that when those conditions ceased, they also ceased. He saw that this law, this principle, or this truth, or this reality, was not a law or principle which admitted of exceptions, but that everything whatsoever, from even a tiny cell up to a great galactic system, a thought, an empire, whatever it might be, anything coming within the sphere of phenomenal existence, was governed, dominated, ruled by this great law of conditionality. Predicta samut pada in Sanskrit. Now this great law, this principle, or this truth, or this reality, expressed in terms of thought and speech, became, as most of you, I'm sure, know already, the basis of Buddhist thought. I'm not going into that this afternoon. But what I must go into, because it's very important in connection with our present subject, is the fact that conditionality is of two kinds. What we might call the cyclical order of conditionality and the progressive or spiral order of conditionality. An understanding of this is absolutely fundamental, not only for an understanding of Buddhist thought itself, but even for the proper practice of Buddhism. Now, by the cyclical mode, of conditionality, we mean a process of action and reaction between pairs of terms which are opposites. For instance, you've got pleasure and pain, or virtue and vice, or birth and death, and then again rebirth. These are all pairs of opposites. And usually what happens is we swing back and forth. We oscillate, as it were, between them. So this is one type of conditionality, the cyclical. You experience pleasure, then that pleasure transforms into pain. After some time, the pain swings back into pleasure, and so on with regard to the other pairs of opposites. So this is the cyclical mode of conditionality. Then the other is what we've called the progressive or spiral mode of conditionality. Here, reaction takes place in what we may call a progressive order between factors which progressively augment one another. That is, the succeeding factor augmenting, increasing the effect of the preceding one. So that you don't get a reaction from a certain term to its opposite, but to another term in the same series, as it were, which augments instead of negating the effect of the previous one. So when, for instance, you have the term pleasure, instead of reacting in a cyclical order to pain, say, you go from pleasure, say, to happiness, and then from happiness to joy, from joy to rapture, from rapture to bliss, and so on indefinitely. There's not a reaction in a cyclical order, but in a progressive order, in a sort of spiral. If in the cyclical order you go round and round like this, in the spiral order you go up and up like that. So these are the two modes of conditionality, the two kinds of conditionality, or two principles of conditionality. Now the first kind, or the first mode, it is that governs what we call the samsara. That is the round of conditioned existence. It's this round of conditioned existence, as many of you know, that is depicted in the Tibetan Wheel of Life, to which we shall come back in a few minutes' time. Now, the second kind, or the second mode of conditionality, governs the spiritual life, especially as the spiritual life is embodied in the path, the way, and the goal of that path or way, that is nirvana or enlightenment itself.